3 days now, they've been throwing paint behind me, behind that wall there. So that's getting pretty exciting. You know, it's amazing when you go from drywall to just primer. It looks beautiful. It really does. I'm thinking, okay, let's just stop there. making more progress back there, folks. 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 5. Here's what it says. And beside this, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, and to virtue knowledge. Now, we'll just stop there tonight. We're going to start taking these step by step. Last time, we began, if you remember the analogy, we began exploring the farm that was given to us, looking at Christ, the foundation of the farm, and the promises that flow to us from that foundation, the virtues that we need to begin building on that farm. Now, like we pointed out last week, someone gives you a farm, you're going to go and explore it, all the resources and the tools and everything, and that's great, but you've got to work the farm too, all right? Knowing all of this does no good if we don't work the farm. And it says there in verse 5, and besides this, it says giving all diligence. So we have to be diligent about this. Unlike what I expressed last week, what I believe is maybe the general approach to Christianity. We get saved, go get baptized, go through a little believer's Bible study course, and then we just sit and wait for spirituality to happen to us. No, we have to be intentional. We have to be diligent about doing this, working the farm, if you will. So God has made some really incredible provisions for us to work the farm, to do this work. We are to add to our salvation, in that verse there, add to your faith, salvation, add to it virtue. Now, what is virtue? It means excellence, okay? We used to... it's a word we use to denote the proper fulfillment of something. For example, a knife isn't fulfilled unless it cuts. That's the proper fulfillment of that. A horse, proper fulfillment of a horse would be a horse running, let's say. Back up with me, 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 3. He says there, according as his divine power hath given unto us all things that pertain unto life and godliness, through the knowledge of him that hath called us to glory and virtue. Now, since he has given us these things, as it says there in verse 3, these things that pertain unto life and godliness, since he has given them to us, we didn't have to buy them, we didn't have to earn them. Christianity is not a merit-based progression. You know, the more you do, the more he gives you. He gives us these at the point of salvation. And since he gives them to us, we now, in response, are to give all diligence to make good use of those advantages that he gives us. I mean, can you imagine a farmer that he's working his farm with some old equipment, like an old farm all? Okay, some of you guys know what that is. They don't have power steering, okay? At least the one I had to drive never had power steering. And then someone gave him a brand new monster John Deere tractor. And he gets up the next morning, he's so excited, he's got all this stuff given to him, and he goes out and jumps on the farm all. What good is that? God has provided us with these amazing tools, if you will, for us to be diligent about becoming more like Christ. So we should add, in this list of 2 Peter that we've started to look at, we should add one virtue to another diligently with haste so that we can reach the highest possible elevation of holiness this side of heaven. When do we reach that? Have any of you reached it yet? Nobody. Okay. that's probably good. You're being truthful. So, not so, but are we still being intentional about going a little bit higher? A little bit higher? One of the worst things about being saved a long time is we get to a certain level and we just start coasting. And yet we would all admit in a heartbeat, just like we did tonight, that we're not there yet. Something is excellent only if it fulfills its purpose. Okay? Back to that word that we were looking at, virtue. Add to your salvation excellence, if you will. So what is the ultimate purpose of a believer? Okay? If we're going to be excellent, we have to fulfill our purpose. So what is the ultimate purpose? Let's look at 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9. It says, but ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people. Those are all descriptions of us. Now, why are we those things? That we would show forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. In other words, our purpose as Christians is to show forth the excellencies of God. Now, my wife asked me earlier today, now, don't you mean excellent? Because spell check does not like excellencies, okay? But that's exactly the right word. What are the excellent virtues or characteristic traits of God? The excellencies of God. Our purpose is to show them. So when people look at us, they see as much of God as humanly possible that you could see in a human. This side of heaven. That's our purpose. This is called Christ-likeness. And this verse, 1 Peter 2, 9, is actually a call to Christ-likeness. This is our, not even, it's not really an invitation, it's kind of a command. This is what we are to be doing. This is our purpose. Then Peter describes what Christ-likeness looks like there in 2 Peter. He says, add to your faith virtue. To virtue, knowledge. To knowledge, temperance. And then on through those verses 5 through 7. So we have one major purpose on this earth. What is it? Worship. What'd you say?
Serve God.
Okay, those are good. Those are purposes. Yes. Tell others about Christ. Absolutely. We can find all of them in the Bible. The one major purpose is to be like Christ. Is it our job? No. Our families? No. Serving? That's a good thing, but that's not our major purpose. Retirement? It's not our major purpose. Helping others? That's a good thing, but it's not our major purpose. It is to be like Christ. Folks, can you imagine if we would be more like Christ, those other things would take care of themselves, wouldn't they? If we were more like Christ, we wouldn't have to focus on serving or helping others or giving the gospel, because as like Christ, we would do those things naturally, see? So our major purpose is to focus on being like Christ. We have, in your notes there, we have come to the realization that we are on the earth for one reason and must wholeheartedly commit ourselves to that purpose. There's our choice for tonight. Are we going to commit ourselves to being more like Christ? Now, this is a difficult thing about preaching and especially preaching this topic here. Because we would all say, yes, that's right. And then tomorrow morning we get up and we go to work and we don't even think about it again. Because we got work. And we've got the to-do list. And we've got housework and yard work and stuff going on at work. And doctor's appointments and life. we can be like Christ doing all those things. Imagine if we strove to be like Christ at work. Be like Christ, ladies, when you're cleaning the house. Now, why is that funny, huh? How about be like Christ when you're doing yard work? Be like Christ when you're behind that driver that just has to drive so slow. Be like Christ in the doctor's office, where you know if you're 10 minutes late for your appointment, you're canceled and he charges you, but you go there on time and you'll sit in his waiting room for 30 minutes. Be like Christ. Just focused on being like Christ in everything, in every place that we go. Now, to some, Christ-likeness is impossible, or so they think. Do you know anyone like that? There's no way I could be like Christ. I would say to all of us, it's impossible. We cannot be like Christ. It's pie in the sky. But the grace of God makes it possible. First or 2 Peter 1, 5 through 7, the list of those things. He gives us those things so we can be Christ-like. Without them, we can't. We cannot be Christ-likeness without Christ. So we have this call to discipleship in Romans chapter 12. I'll give you a second to turn there. Romans chapter 12. Okay, verse 1, it says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Now, why would Paul write under the inspiration of God? Why would he write in verse 1 that we present our bodies a living sacrifice? Okay, we get that. And he says, by the way, it's your reasonable service. Why would he write that? Well, if we go back to 2 Peter, because of these great and precious promises, he's given us all things pertaining to life and godliness. Because of that, it's only reasonable that we give ourselves to working the farm. We give ourselves to this matter of being like Christ. It's called becoming a disciple, if you will. This single-minded focus to be like Christ is normal Christianity. That's what normal Christianity is in the Bible. Not necessarily what we see around us, but that's what it should be around us. It should be this: hearing the words of the Master and doing them in order to be like him. That's discipleship. And to do this, it requires one thing. Discipleship requires humility. Discipleship requires humility. If you could back that screen up one for me here. Hearing the words of the Master and doing them in order to be like him. How many of you love to be told what to do? Nobody, okay? How about when you're told what to do, you do it? Raise your hand. How about when you're told what you do it depending on who's telling you what to do? Raise your hand. Okay. That makes a big difference, doesn't it? Man, when we were kids, you know, six kids in the house, mom and dad would occasionally need a break, and they would take off and leave the oldest one in charge. My sister. That was rough. That was rough. We all had nicknames growing up. She was the perfect one because she never did anything wrong. And when there was a problem, they always took her word for it. Didn't matter what all five other kids said. Okay? In the mouth of one witness, my sister, a matter is settled. That was it, folks. So unfair. She told us what to do. We had to do it. Hearing the words of the Master, now we're talking about Christ. Doing them. Why? So we could be like Him. That takes humility. To hear the words and do them. To hear the words and not say, yeah, but I don't think I want to. Hear the words and say, well, I'm really kind of busy right now. Hear the words and say, yeah, that's just not my personality. Hear the words and say, you know, I think I'll get to it later. Yeah, that sounds really good. That's a good idea. I'll have to do that sometime. Now, all five of those things that I just said, how long do you think you would be employed if you said them to your boss? Hey, I'd like for you to do this. Well, I don't think I want to. Well, you know, it's not really my personality. Well, I don't think I agree with that. Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. I might get to that one day. No, we understand humility when it comes to our employers, right? We want our children to understand humility when it comes to us. Amen. Why don't we demonstrate humility to our children by letting them see us humble ourselves to what the Master's words are and then obey them? Parents, you can do more teaching with your actions than you can with your words. We can do more teaching to the world around us with our actions more so than our words. Hearing the Master's words and then doing them. Paul said in Romans chapter 12 and verse 1, he said, this is our reasonable service. This is reasonable, to offer ourselves as a living sacrifice. Do you remember the first week we started this, 2 weeks ago now, do you remember the embryo illustration on about all these different virtues and how they work? One thing, they're all developing at the same time. But one thing develops, which then aids in the development of the others. Humility, in this analogy, would be the brain of the embryo, okay? The brain. It regulates the growth of all of the other virtues that we're going to be looking at. Without humility and the commitment to follow Christ, those two things go hand in hand. The rest of our character will remain underdeveloped. You find someone, even if it's just you looking in the mirror, you find someone that isn't humble and they're proud, and you'll see someone who is not growing spiritually. You can't. You can't with that there. Everything else remains underdeveloped if we don't have humility. And perhaps we might even say everything else is kind of deformed without humility. So Satan wants to hinder that development, deform it, if you will. And one of his weapons that he uses is worldliness. Now, Christ has called us to be single-mindedly like him. Okay? Satan is working to draw us away from that purpose in order to create man in his own image. We were created in the image of God. Sin has marred that. So now God has given us these exceeding great and precious promises, all things that pertain to life and godliness, so that we can once again become like Christ and reach these high elevations of holiness. Satan wants to stop that. He's thinking, hey, wait a minute. You know, I spent 30 some years with Jesus walking the earth. I don't want millions more Jesuses walking on the earth. I got to stop them from becoming like him, because just him caused me enough trouble. So he's working to get us off of that single-minded focus. Do you remember our default? Okay? It's always pulling us away from God. our sin nature, the things that the world offers to us, while not bad, okay, they're working to put us into neutral at the very minimum. One way is to desensitize us to anything spiritual or godly. Satan wants to desensitize us to that. Let me give you an example. Like church, for an example. Some people can miss church and it bothers them. Okay? Because, and not because of an illness. Well, yeah, because of an illness even. Or they just made a choice. We're not going to go tonight. And it bothers them. Then next time, not so much. And eventually, not at all. They have been desensitized to the spiritual. Wednesday night prayer meetings. Right here, where y'all are at. Aren't you glad you're here tonight? Someone actually told me to my face one time, the reason they don't come to Wednesday night prayer meeting is because we pray. Desensitized to spiritual things. So we have to capture the heart for Christ. Our default is pulling it the other direction. This is what it comes down to, folks. It comes down to a mindset, okay? A way of thinking. Who has your heart? Who has it? Here's some descriptions of a fool in Proverbs. Okay, you go to Proverbs, you read it, you're going to find that word fool a lot. Now, a fool is not someone who matches all of these descriptions, because I'm not giving you all of the things in Proverbs that God says that person is a fool. Just one of these things. Like in the Bible, it says, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Okay, so if a person says that or lives that way, God says they're a fool. So let me give you some of the things in Proverbs that God says, if a person does that, they're a fool. Naive, bristles at restraint, shares his misguided opinions, deceives authorities, insists on his own way, openly identifies with the godless culture by his fashions and habits. The person who is pleasure-seeking, self-seeking, avoids attempts of anything to hold him accountable. God says, fool, 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 fool. A single-minded resolve to become like Christ is the only remedy for that. That is our default, folks. Our default is a fool. The remedy is a single-minded resolve to become like Christ. Now, and it has to be intentional, because remember, it just doesn't happen. How many of you have been saved for more than 30 years? Raise your hands. 40, 50, 60. How old are you? Never mind. Okay, all right. So, many people can remember when they first got saved. Man, their life was changing, incredible, like at breakneck speed, all these changes taking place. And they were just so in love with Jesus and so in love with the Bible and church people, okay? They couldn't get enough of them. Let's say in the last 20 years, for those of you that have been saved a long time, okay, like myself, have you been growing spiritually at the same pace? What's going on? You know, I'm not saying we have to grow fast, but we need to keep growing. In the last year, the last 5 years, can you pinpoint something in your life where you have grown spiritually? Hearing the words of the Master and then obeying them. Humility. It's needed. Most believers, they try to deal with worldliness kind of piecemeal, okay? And maybe you've taken this approach before, and I have too in the past. Okay, so you hear a good message, and oh, there's this issue. and you're going to work on this issue, or you're going to work on that issue, okay? And you focus on it, and you struggle with it, and you work on it, and you keep struggling with that issue. And the result is a whole lot of frustrated Christians. Because they're focused on this issue, and they're trying to work on this issue, and you're saying, Pastor, what do you mean? That's a good thing, isn't it? You're fighting this temptation or that temptation. You're arguing about this or that worldly element. Humility and a resolve to just become like Christ. Okay? Now follow this. When a person has those two things, the gray areas tend to disappear in our lives. The things we struggle with, they're not so much of a struggle anymore. Because we're focused now on something else. It's kind of like, someone that has an addiction, okay? And that thing that they're addicted to, they set it right there in front of them and say, I'm going to fight it. Ooh. Oh, no, I'm going to fight it. I got to stay away from that. All I'm doing is focusing on that, right? I need to put my focus on something else. Someone who the doctor has said, you've got to reduce some calories, okay? I think I've used this illustration before, and they go to a restaurant, a buffet, and they're sitting there at the table with their bowl of salad. And there's the buffet. Why are they doing that? Focus on other. See, in our spiritual life, folks, we're focused on these issues, which they need to be addressed. I'm not saying ignore them. But if we're not focused on Christ, we're trying to fight a battle without Christ-likeness. And remember what I said before, it's impossible for us to do these things unless we're humble and resolve to be like Christ and focused on becoming like Christ. And then these gray areas too. You know these gray areas that Christians just argue about all the time, and they write blogs on the internet about it, and there's debates here and debates there and name calling, blah, 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 and this and that. If we would just focus on Christ, there wouldn't be any gray areas. I honestly believe that. We wouldn't be looking to see, okay, is this too worldly or not too worldly? And then there's this big debate that broils out right here. Is this too worldly? Not too worldly? Let's just focus on Christ. By the way, if the world's here, Christ is way over there, folks. He's not right next to the world. Holiness is not anywhere close to worldliness. So let's just focus on holiness, being like Christ. So the question for us to answer tonight is, who has our heart? Who has it? We'll stop there, and let's go ahead and have some prayer time.